Good morning and welcome to Seeing with the Eyes of Love. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
We have a lovely quote to kick off this morning.
All right.
And here it is.
Okay.
With humility comes the willingness to stop trying to control or change other people or life situations or events ostensibly for their own good. To be a committed spiritual seeker, it is necessary to relinquish the desire to be right or of imaginary value to society. In fact, nobody's ego or belief systems are of any value to society at all. The world is neither good nor bad nor defective, nor is it in need of help or modification, because its appearance is only a projection of one's own mind. No such world exists.
Wow. Well, I think the word for that would be intense, huh?
Right. That's what such a place.
Yes. Will you read it again?
Yes. With humility comes the willingness to stop trying to control or change other people or life situations or events ostensibly for their own good. To be a committed spiritual seeker, it is necessary to relinquish the desire to be right or of imaginary value to society. In fact, nobody's ego or belief systems are of any value to society at all. The world is neither good nor bad nor defective, nor is it in need of help or modification, because its appearance is only a projection of one's own mind. No such world exists.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, as I was sitting with it, Jerry, there was the immediate conditioned response, which it's sort of like then, you know, it always goes to this place, and we seem to have that discussion no matter what process we're looking to, whether it's mostly in the process of acceptance. So acceptance means we have to resign ourselves to how things are. And I project that's not where this is being pointed to. It's the shift in the orientation from which I know, right, that
yes.
Accepting what is accepting the orientation that I actually don't know. And to be informed by something other than me is what we're pointing at.
Yes, because if I accept that that premise, then the world that I see is my projection. What needs to be fixed and changed is in me, not out there. So if I am focused on out there and you and what's wrong and how I need to fix that, then there are two things going on. One, I'm interfering with somebody else. And two, I'm not doing the only work that is possible for me to do, which is my own transformation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the me is really the work that has to be, because if the world that has to be changed is a projection of the mind, then what really needs to change is within quote me, and that's the work
yes.
that we can do without
yes.
interfering
and
in someone else.
Yeah, and the thing that I love about that is that it brings it back to something that is possible for us. It takes us out of that hopeless, helpless place. If we accept that premise, which we know intuitively, if nothing else, to be true, that the world that I project doesn't exist anywhere except in my own mind. That's the only place it's real. And so that's the place to transform it.
Yes, and find the kingdom of heaven within, right? Going back to
yes.
Aldous Huxley. Thy will
yes,
be done. The corollary is, my will has to go.
Right, my will is not done.
That's right.
Yeah, thy will is done, my will is not done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear from our first caller.
All right, thank you.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Sylvia from Connecticut.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. Hi, Terry. Hi, Ashwini.
Hello.
So
what's going
on? I had a question, and I had a question. It's been great to hear to listen to every single midday and have these awesome, like, it's been very helpful these couple of months to have you guys. I mean, it's been very, very, very good. One thing I wanted to ask you that I think is related with with the quote is what happens if when you are with interacting with people and talking about projections and you see, and because you know these people a lot, that in their interactions they are ego-identified because they always make these separations between me and you, and these are the bad ones and these are the good ones. They always have that those opinions. But then, because I know them, I know that when they are faced with the moment of facing someone that is different, then they are good people. You know what I mean? So basically, they do not follow their opinion. It's kind of, I don't know if it makes sense.
Yes. Yes. Well, and we can recognize that everywhere in ourselves when we're paying attention at that level, right? So we say all kinds of stuff that in the situation is not at all what happens with us. So if we let ego just blah, 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 then it, you know, it wants to talk about what it wants to talk about, which is all designed to separate, right? To perpetuate itself, and so if we realize that the ego is negativity, right? It is no to the yes that is life. It's constantly looking for what's wrong and what's missing and wants to be in that conversation because that's what gets it attention. Okay, so when we realize that, we can watch other people do that. We can watch us do that, right? That's just what it does, blah, 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 blah. And then when the person is, as you say, they're actually in front of another human being.
Yeah.
With these people, it's certainly not a guarantee with all of us all the time. But what happens is that the heart then is what's present. Presence is present. And they don't come from that place at all because that's not who they are. So what you're actually having a chance to see is the authenticity of these people. And as you say, they're good. They're good people.
They are the people when they start, when they are ego-identified and they start saying all these things from ego and this and criticizing or making like fear talk. Talking, and then I see myself that my ego is responding. It's kind of I see my my egocentric karmic conditioning jumping in,
right?
And get offended.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's just a wonderful little house of mirrors, isn't it? And of course, what those voices would tell us, what conditioning would tell us is, if those people wouldn't be that way, then I wouldn't be this way. But all that's happening, of course, is those people are helping me see the work that I need to do.
Yeah. So they are my teachers.
My problem is not actually their ego. Right? It seems like it. It's in the same way that I kid people with children, right? So there you are. It's dinner time, and everybody is going crazy, and the kids are screaming and yelling and carrying on, and the parents are completely stressed, and they put the kids in time out, and the parents feel better. Okay? But are they better? No. No, they just don't have to face any longer what's going on with them. And as soon as the kids come back out, they're in the same state, right? So we're conditioned, heavily conditioned to believe that we are the way we are because of something else. Something is, this is not how I really am. Something is causing me to be this way. Well, if we realize that what's happening is I identify, right? So I leave presence, identify with ego, and let ego react. You know, in that sense, it's true. When ego isn't there and I come back to presence, I feel like a very different person. But what we need to learn in that is I want to come back to presence, not I want to try to get rid of external people and circumstances so that I feel better.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah, that's great. That's a lot to think about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, don't think about it. But if, as you watch, you'll just see it happening, and you'll get clearer and clearer on what that process is.
So if there's any problem, because basically there's no problem. Ego is the one that says there's a problem. But
precisely so. And it's only saying there's a problem so that you'll give it attention.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
if,
So what we can do in that situation is just watch it in the same way you watch your colleagues, right, your friends. You just watch ego do what it does and go, oh, that's just ego acting out for attention. Okay, I'm going to turn my attention to this. I choose unconditional love.
Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Well, thank you, and have a... And well, I'm very happy about this, and thank you, everyone.
You're most welcome. Take good care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sylvia. You know, Sherry, in that little quote and that conversation, it all comes together, right? That the humility is to accept that there is a process, whatever we call it, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, conditioned mind, that has an intrinsic an innate attribute of negativity and separation. When we have the humility to realize that that's what is within quotes, whatever it is that's causing our experience and not the other person that it projects it onto, then we have the ability to do something about it. And the ingredients for that are we cannot go to self-hate for having that, which is what we've been talking about a lot in the last couple of quotes, right? It's not that self-hate is not the place to go to because we're born with a force that has the ability to experience life in a way that that feels like suffering.
Yes,
so we have
exactly
to accept that exists, that it's not personal, that there is a way to live differently, which is to deal with that and redirect the attention to what we choose instead.
Yes.
And that's
exactly so.
That first step.
Yes. And, of course, with what you're saying, when we don't take it personally, we don't need to take anybody else's process personally. So as with Sylvia's friends, colleagues, we can just look at one another and go, Well, we know what that's like. We know what it's like to be snatched by that system and go off into that kind of negativity. So the other piece of that from our quote today, because, yes, you're right, one of ego's great weapons is making us take it personally, getting us to take the blame for what it's doing. But with that, you know, so the world that I live in is my projection. And when I understand that, and there's nobody else out there, nobody needs me to fix them or change anything or that sort of thing, then we could say, well, then why don't I just find a white wall, sit down in front of it, and spend the rest of my life there? Why would I do anything if there's nothing wrong? Yeah?
Yes.
But, yes. I mean, that's an easy conclusion to get to, isn't it? And one that ego would like us to get to. But the thing about that is we don't have to do what we do because there's something wrong. We can do what we do because we want to.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, and that possibility that we started out this morning with, that if attention is not focused on that orientation, it's the ignorance is the root cause of suffering, right? There is an expanded awareness that assists us to do everything that life happens to be doing. But it's not from that orientation. It's an orientation of awareness and presence instead of an orientation of there's something wrong.
Yes.
It's that place where conditioned mind gets to, which is just because I accept that there is nothing wrong implies there's nothing to do, because its orientation is always from changing what is so. But if we accept what is so, the whole possibility of action from what is so opens up.
Yes, and the fun part about that is if we get that ego's whole deal is doing, right? So it gets us to focus on something wrong and then what we should do about it or what somebody should do about it. Do, 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 do. So if ego is out of the picture, then what it's going to say is, well, then why do anything?
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's right. It's giving us clear information. There is no reason to do anything from ego. But that doesn't mean the heart isn't calling us constantly to participate wholeheartedly in the way life is unfolding in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's delightful.
It really is. It's very fun.
Okay.
Do we have somebody else?
Several, actually. Here you go.
Oh, good.
You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm very excited to be talking with you both. And I'll ask my question now because you kind of talked through it just prior to me getting on, which was good because we can go a little deeper. But so in my situation, I've been living with a person who is very angry and grumpy a lot of the times, I project. And I have been trying to shift to see him with the eyes of love. And I get to a point where I feel that I feel that there's physical danger or psychological danger, and I want to protect myself or my kids or, you know, but then because of the work that we've been doing, I get to a place of saying, well, that's my ego wanting to protect itself. How can I see through this situation with compassion? But it gets very sticky for me. And I'm wondering if you have a better way to look
at
that.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So, Kim, the thing that we can know is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate will use anything to hang on. And it will certainly use awareness practice. So the first place is it's not your ego. So that's a big one right there. So when we say, the voice says, well, that's just your ego. No, I don't. I, from an authentic place, don't have an ego. So that can give us a clue right there that ego is talking and ego is listening.
Okay.
You with me on that one?
I am.
Yeah, so that's what always happens with people in self-hatred. So the voice says, in the head says, oh my God, what is the matter with you? Why did you do that? You are such an idiot. And the person feels bad. Okay. That's a perfect example of ego talks, ego listens. Okay. Because the heart, true nature, authenticity, whatever we want to go with that. First of all, it's not going to say anything like that. And second of all, is not going to believe anything like that. So we can know that we are watching an ego tableau. All right?
Right.
So that's the first piece of it. The second piece of it is there is nothing. So this practice is based in Zen Buddhism. And there's nothing in this. It's not Judeo-Christian. Okay? We've been heavily influenced to a Judeo-Christian orientation of life. But that's not what this awareness practice is based in. So there is nothing about this practice that says you should stay in a situation that is dangerous or harmful or whatever. Nothing. Now, should you want to, that's great. And a lot of times people do because they want to see it kind of as a retreat, as a workshop. You know, what happens if this? What happens if that? And there's a feeling of, you know, I'm in a karmic situation here. Probably if I leave, I'm just going to find myself in another one. You know, this person is probably as good a person as you're going to find, blah, blah, blah. That's not the same as I feel physical danger or I feel frightened for my children's safety and well-being. There's not, so awareness practice is not a contest. And again, those voices would make it a contest. My favorite example is you're an alcoholic, and what it says is if you were the right spiritual person, you could be a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that's designed to keep a person in a situation where ego is just going to run the show because it's making the decisions and that sort of thing. So my encouragement to people always in a situation like this, like you're describing, is yes, you want to be as unconditionally loving as you possibly can, but for God's sake, don't leave Kim out of the picture.
Right.
Right? Because that's right. Where ego wants us. So you should be unconditionally loving of your children and your parents and your siblings and your partner and everybody in the world, and somehow that's your job to be that for everyone else. That's not right. This awareness practice.
Right. I think you touched on it with also acting from the heart, you know, and the heart acts from love, and love for yourself is possibly, you know, staying out of a situation where there's harm, you know, where there's real harm, physical harm coming to you.
Yes. And we're not required to hate people or judge them or believe anything in particular about them. You know, that kind of thing is a result of not responding when intuitively we sense or there's the guidance that says, this might not be a good situation.
Okay, say that one more time.
What happens is, egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate runs the show. Okay, not just for us, but for everybody all around the world, right? And so the rules, the laws, the beliefs, the assumptions, the projections are all coming from the same place. So all of the you shoulds, okay, that the conditioned mind has us trapped in. Well, you should be this way. You should be that. You didn't. You should have. Why didn't? What's that constant conversation in conditioned mind is all formulated by conditioning, right? So what happens is, so I have this job, and it's just I'm unhappy. Okay, I'm unhappy. And I'm doing everything that I can to be happy in this job, and I'm not happy in this job, okay? I dread it. I don't want to go. It's awful. But I should. I should, okay? And everything in me is saying, you know, find something else. There's got to be, you know, no, you can't. You can't do it. You need to stay there. You don't know that you're going to find anything better. Okay, I drag myself to work for another year, and I can feel myself dying inside, right? But I'm not allowed to leave. Now, how am I going to get out of that? Well, for a lot of people, they get sick.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
That's
right?
The way to get out of a situation. A lot of people die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than face the karma and to make a decision that their heart wants them to make, that they know is from a deeper, clearer place, just find a way to exit.
That's intense.
It is very intense. It is, yeah. And so all of that is just to say, please listen to the voices in conditioned mind, not as authorities to believe, but just as information to step back from and see what is resonating with your heart and what seems like it's coming from conditioning, from self-hate, from other information.
Well, thank you, Deep Gashel, to you both. Thank you very, very much.
You are most welcome.
Thank you, Kim. You know, Sherry, that was just such a powerful reminder of how conditioning, A, uses practice against us, but also obscures what it is that is so, because it shouldn't be.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That there's intelligence that is intelligent and from a place of compassionate for all would include what the ego would exclude. And we're forced into making decisions that would harm us and protect the ego from that place in those situations that we're talking about.
Yeah, that is beautifully stated. That system is fine with us being harmed as long as it's protected.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And one of the bamboozles I was seeing while you were talking to Kim is that place where, let's see if I can actually articulate it, that extricating ourselves from a place of danger or a place that isn't helpful to the body or to a person is a place of coming from compassion for that person. And we're meant to think that that's selfish.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And we're meant to forget that we have one life. One life. And that somehow it is noble to live a life that you don't want to live, a life of unhappiness, a life of shoulds. That's a better way to live. And, of course, every spiritual tradition will tell us that that what we are letting go is ego. That's what we're letting go. That's the self-will. The selfishness that we're trapped in is living our lives for ego.
Yeah. Yeah. It would so help if the language hadn't been converted to ego's use, right?
Yeah. Hadn't been designed by ego.
That's right, because that's what actually trips us up a lot, right? That I'm letting go of the self. Then that means it's easy for the ego to manipulate that to mean that I'm doing everything that doesn't take care of me. Because that is selfish.
Yes, right. Yes, I'm doing everything for everybody else. But full circle back to this quote, because what this quote says is there isn't anybody else. So let's face it, we're doing everything we're doing for ourselves. Now, which self are you doing it for? Is it the little self of ego, or is it the big self of God? Which self are we serving? And for almost everybody all the time, we're listening to a voice in our head that tells us what we should be doing, how we should be feeling, and that is serving the little S self of ego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The scariest place for us is the quote that I can never remember who it is. Saint somebody. First, love God and do what you will. Mm-hmm. Love God and do whatever. That is the scariest place, right? But if first we love unconditionally, we will not go astray. We simply won't. But if we stay with those voices in conditioned mind, with it should and you have to and you better not and oh my God, we have already gone astray. So we got to risk stepping out there into that unconditional love, into happiness, into enjoyment, into being a joyful presence in the world. We have to risk that. We just must.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Feel alive.
Yes. Choose life.
Choose life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're at our time, Sherry, unbelievably. And so I guess we'll start up again tomorrow.
I guess we will. And in the meantime, we're just going to go out there and joyfully choose life.
Joyfully choose life. Shall
All right.
We? Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Ashwini.
Okay.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.